Welcome, friend. Well, there's a sight for sore eyes. Look at you all gussied up, just for me. What are those, Fruit of the Looms? Is that too big an ask, Chester? That people dress up to listen? I beg your pardon. Sometimes I like to pretend this is show business, that's all. Come on in, friend. No pants required. All right. Hey, before we get started, check out simplyscarypodcast.com and consider signing up as a patron. For as little as $5 a month, you get their entire catalog dating back to 2012, ad-free and available to download or stream. You're probably getting tired of hearing this every week, but I'll tell you what, sign up now and I'll never bring it up again, I promise. Same goes for patreon.com/drewblood. All right, friends, smoke 'em if you got 'em and drink those glasses to the bottom, because your old buddy Drew Blood has a tale to tell. And tonight, our tale comes courtesy of R.K. Combrink by way of our pals at Velox Books. This one's from his big collection, These Lonely Places, available everywhere you get your books in Kindle, print, and audio. So without further delay, from R.K. Combrink, I give you Blood Oranges.
So, what's that tattoo all about?
Lawrence pointed to the inside of Megan's forearm. She stopped arranging onions and turned her arm outwards, looking down at the drawing inked into her pale skin. It was a human arm, hand outstretched and grasping as it disappeared into a field of lush red flowers. She chuckled self-consciously and shrugged. Lawrence grinned.
Does it mean anything?
Megan kept her back to him as she hid rough-looking onions behind fresh ones. A memory surfaced, smashing open her 7-year-old brother's piggy bank and taking the $9 to go buy a single Vicodin from a guy up the street. When her mother confronted her, Megan had screamed at her to go fuck herself. Not long after that, her last real friend, Sam, told her they couldn't hang out anymore because she had become sloppy and mean and intolerable. She started going to meetings. A hard and painful year went by, and at the end of it, she felt like a better person. A sober person, anyway. People were still avoiding her, including her family, but she was proud. She celebrated by getting the tattoo. She wanted to save up to get another one on the other arm, a companion piece that showed a girl climbing out of the poppies triumphant, rescued. She'd promised herself after holding down a job for a year and staying sober the whole time, she would do it.
Nope. I just thought it was pretty.
A small silence fell between them and Lawrence fidgeted, leaning against his push broom. After a few moments, he spoke again.
So, you got any big plans this weekend?
Megan shook her head.
No, not really. Just sitting in my apartment watching movies. By myself, as usual. How about you?
Lawrence suddenly turned shy.
You're gonna laugh.
Maybe. Tell me anyway.
The young boy looked around the store as if someone other than Megan might hear.
Well, do you know anything about that old building behind the store?
Yeah. It used to be a doctor's office or a medical testing lab or something. We used to try and break in there back in the day.
Yeah, and now they keep that shit closed up tight.
Lawrence dropped his voice to a whisper.
Because it's haunted.
Megan burst into giggles, drawing strange looks from a customer across the aisle. Lawrence nodded, his expression showing he had expected as much.
Yeah, I said you'd laugh. It's true, though. There's lots of stories about that place.
Megan leaned against her cart.
I know the one about the ghostly security guard with the flashlight.
She considered cocking her eyes to the ceiling.
And the weird noises.
Lawrence shrugged.
You forgot about the evil hippies.
Evil hippies?
Yeah, like the Manson family. Hanging out, getting high, killing people.
She shook her head, her short shaggy hair bouncing.
So what's that got to do with your weekend plans?
Lawrence pulled his phone from his pocket.
I'm going to bust in there and get a ghost on tape.
He was suddenly cut off by a voice calling over the speaker system.
Lawrence, please come to the courtesy desk. Lawrence?
Damn it, I gotta go. Smoke at midnight?
Megan waved her hand at him.
Yeah, get going.
She pushed a little gray handcart through a pair of swinging metal doors at the far end of the produce department and into a small prep room. A stocky young man with black hair and a beard to match stood at one of the tables, peeling and slicing his way through a pile of huge red oranges. He didn't look up when Megan walked in. She stepped to one of the stainless steel sinks to wash the stink of the onions from her hands.
Hey, Gil.
He raised one hand without turning around.
Hey.
She hung the sprayer back on its hook and turned to watch what he was doing. He spun an orange expertly against the blade of his knife, the skin peeling away in one long curled strip. He split the naked fruit down the middle and sliced it into wedges. He set each wedge carefully on a sample tray and licked his fingers after the last one had been placed.
You done with that cart? He asked over his shoulder.
Kinda late for samples, isn't it?
It was nearly 10, and the store was all but empty of customers. He lifted the tray carefully and set it on the cart. He adjusted his heavy-framed glasses and shrugged.
I'm here another hour. I'm bored. Might as well.
He picked up an orange slice and offered it to her.
Want one?
She shook her head and made a face.
Ugh, no thanks. I told you I hate oranges.
Gil's expression went slack, and Megan realized her tone had been harsh.
But, I mean, they do look really pretty. I've never seen oranges like that.
Gil smiled.
They're specially bred blood oranges.
Oh?
She was already bored. Gil was nice enough, but more enthusiastic about his job than Megan felt was normal.
Yes.
He popped a slice into his mouth, sucking the juice out with a wet kissing sound before chewing and swallowing it.
Most blood oranges are smaller than the common sweet orange, and usually only the flesh gets really red. But these,
he looked affectionately at the tray of fruit,
these are a subspecies that was deliberately mutated by growers in Sicily. The seeds were sent here to be.
Megan held up her hand.
You know what? That's awesome. But I've got to get some of that corn shucked and wrapped before my next break. And you want to get those samples out there.
He nodded.
Yeah, you're right.
He turned and pushed the cart out through the swinging doors, calling over his shoulder as he went.
See ya!
Later, on the bench outside the store, Megan told Lawrence about Gil's blood oranges, rolling her eyes and sighing heavily. Lawrence shook his head.
You might think he's boring, but that chick sure don't.
He pointed to a small hatchback huddled in a corner of the parking lot near the fence. Gil was behind the wheel, and a young woman with long, slender legs and very short workout shorts was climbing into the passenger seat beside him. Her bright smile was apparent, even at that distance. Megan squinted, nonplussed.
That's not his girlfriend, is it?
Lawrence chuckled.
Nah, your boy's a player. I see him with different girls all the time.
He dragged on his cigarette and sat back.
He's gonna hit that ass tonight.
Megan cuffed him absently on the arm.
Don't be crude.
She watched as the little car pulled away and drove off into the night. She almost told Lawrence about the scene she had witnessed earlier between Gil and the girl he was with. She had seen them as she passed through the produce department on her way to break. They were standing close together, the woman bent forward, leaning on the sample cart. Her mouth was open, and Gil slowly and delicately slipped one of the orange slices between her lips. Her tongue had peeked out and grazed his fingertips while her eyelids slid shut. The ecstasy on the woman's face as she chewed and swallowed the fruit was, in Meg's opinion, a huge overreaction, and more than a little gross. But for whatever reason, instead of telling Lawrence, Megan simply wrinkled her nose and tossed her cigarette to the ground.
She looks like a slut.
She stood and stretched.
See you later, man. I'm out.
She went back to the prep room and worked there till the end of her shift. Later, as she drove home alone to her apartment, Megan found it unsettling that Gil, the know-it-all fruit guy, was with someone that night. Many nights, if Lawrence was to be believed, and she wasn't. She was pretty. She was interested. She could play the violin. She was well-read. She had nice boobs. How could someone like Gil be doing better than her?
Stop it.
She took a breath. That was the old Megan talking. She had her meetings now and sobriety. She was better than that. She said the serenity prayer and it seemed to comfort her some. When she stepped into her tiny apartment, she was greeted by the sour smell of dirty dishes, the smell of the careless. It was dark inside. Humps of dirty clothes littered the floor.
Welcome home, sweetie.
She sighed as she plopped onto the couch in front of the TV. The hours passed slowly and quietly. She found herself imagining what was going on between Gil and his date. Did his beard tickle when they kissed? Was he slipping off her shorts, running his grubby little hands along her long, smooth thighs? Did their mingled tongues taste of citrus? She realized with dismay that she was imagining her own face on the girl's body, and that her hand had strayed down the front of her pants. For a moment she loathed herself and thought to stop, but then, realizing it was all she had, she kept going until she finished. It didn't take very long, and eventually she fell asleep.
In local news, police still have no leads on a missing Connersville woman. 21-year-old Heather Aiken was last seen leaving Forever Fitness on Muncie Avenue last Thursday at around 6 p.m. Aiken's mother reported the disappearance Monday when she stopped by her daughter's apartment after not hearing from her all weekend and discovering several days' worth of mail in the mailbox. Police, using a GPS locator, found her cell phone discarded at the side of a wooded trail in Whitewater State Park. A widespread manhunt has been launched, but so far no clues have been uncovered. If you have any information about Heather Aiken's whereabouts, you are urged to call Crime Stoppers at...
When a photo of the missing girl appeared on the TV screen in the break room, Lawrence began choking on the stale donut he had been eating, spitting wet bits of pastry onto the table in front of him. Megan sat up, concerned, and whacked him on the back.
Hey man, you okay?
The bag boy took a swig of his soda bottle and sputtered. He looked at her with wide, haunted eyes.
Did you see who that was?
Megan glanced at the TV. The girl's picture was still showing. She was pretty in a blonde, ordinary way. Something about her smile was uncomfortably familiar.
I don't know. Maybe. Who is she?
Lawrence pointed to the screen and spoke in a harsh whisper.
That's the chick that left with Gil the other night, man.
Megan looked again. The story had already changed, but now that he had said it, she thought he might be right. That had been almost a week ago, and she had only seen the girl for a second, but she remembered that smile. She also remembered the way that girl had eaten an orange slice right out of his hand. She had called the girl a slut. Her stomach churned.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
His expression was miserable.
I was checking her out in the store for a while before we went on break. Dude, that was her.
Suddenly, a voice came from the doorway behind them.
You guys saw us?
Lawrence and Megan both turned to find Gil watching them.
Nah, man. We was just smoking out on the bench.
Lawrence's voice sounded very loud in the little room.
Still, she was pretty hot. That your girlfriend?
Nope. She's a friend of a friend. She just needed a ride home.
This chick on the news looked dead on her, man. Dead on her.
Lawrence looked down at his hands, fidgeting.
Maybe your friend ought to check on their friend.
Gil's expression remained blank.
She's fine.
Megan felt a dull ache begin to throb at her temples. She wanted a Vicodin. Her body yearned for a dark room, some low music, her pills and a glass of vodka to wash them down with. The walls seemed to shrink and their conversation had become overbearing. She needed to get away. She stood from the table and pulled her apron over her head.
Well, fellas, I'm gonna get back to work.
Before she could get out the door, Gil fixed her with his tiny eyes, reversed magnified behind thick lenses.
Hey, Meg, I've got a bunch of those orange slices set out on the sample tray. Could you wheel it out to the floor?
She gave him a lame thumbs up and headed to the prep room. She found a tray already with the beautiful red slices arranged in concentric circles, like seductive little smiles. Beads of moisture clung to the scarlet rind, and the flesh was swollen with juice. Megan's throat convulsed with the taste of bile. A painful morning vomiting up what felt like gallons of orange juice not so long ago had robbed them of their appeal. Her headache intensified. She pushed the cart out the swinging doors and left it next to a display piled high with bags of mandarins and tangelos. A bit later, as she was tossing old bruised apples into a box, she saw a young mother with a little boy of about 5 or 6 standing by the cart. The woman looked around as if to ask permission to take a slice.
"Those are free samples, ma'am,"
Megan called. The woman smiled and thanked her, picking up a slice for herself and one for her son. She popped it into her mouth and worked her lips around it. Her face melted with almost erotic delectation. She pulled a tissue from her purse and wrapped the rind in it. She grabbed one more slice, then two, and began pushing her cart down the aisle. Megan was amused to see the little boy look at the orange slice, sniff it, and drop it to the floor. Kids got good taste, she thought, turning back to her work. She forgot all about the woman and her son until the next afternoon. The Channel 11 news van was parked in front of Brindle's supermarket with a cameraman and reporter standing at the ready. They ignored Megan as she strolled past her on the way into the store. It was Lawrence's night off, so she went to the front desk and confronted the night manager.
Heidi, what's up with the news people out there? Some kid got left here last night. His mom just walked off into the ozone. He said one minute she was holding his hand, the next minute she wasn't. He went over to look at the candy rack, and when he turned around, she was gone.
Heidi popped her eyes at Megan to emphasize the point.
Like, gone, gone. She hasn't answered her call, didn't call any of her family. Nobody's seen her since. Pretty messed up.
Megan felt cold.
Heidi, I think I saw them last night.
Heidi nodded.
Yeah, a few people did. Cops will probably come and get a statement from you.
Megan drifted back to the produce department in a daze. A throbbing had awakened beneath her temples and her ears felt full of cotton. She remembered the little boy's mother, her face orgasmic as she enjoyed her orange slice. She thought of the way the boy had tossed his aside, wanting nothing to do with it. Then she tried to imagine the woman dropping her son's hand and just walking away from him, disappearing into the night. At the back of the department, she saw Gil rolling stickers onto bell peppers with the labeler. He saw her looking and waved. She felt herself waved back and thought of the other missing girl from the news. Two plainclothes policemen drifted through the store speaking to all the employees. When they asked her if she had seen the woman and her son, Megan lied and said no. Somehow she was uncomfortable with Gil knowing she had seen or spoken to them. An ugly, uneasy feeling prickled along the back of her neck. At quitting time, she hurried home, glad to be away from the police, the produce department, and Gil. Later in her dreams, two missing women became one female shade, wafting through the store in gym shorts, holding onto a faceless little boy, blood-colored footprints trailing behind them. They would turn and smile at her, revealing bright red orange peels staring out from their eye sockets like twin suns. Lawrence continued to insist that Gil was involved in the first girl's disappearance and probably the second one too. He said he believed Gil was sprinkling ground-up roofies onto the oranges or something similar.
I swear to God, I would have told the cops to check his ass out.
Megan told him she didn't want to hear any more about it. She had to work with Gil and it was all stupid anyway. He couldn't hurt anybody.
He's harmless.
Her mouth went dry when she said this, but she held that line fiercely. Lawrence wouldn't drop it, though. He claimed to have seen Gil hanging around the building next door, creeping in the shadows. He said he was going to watch the produce clerk closely, catch him in the act. As the weeks passed, Megan began taking fewer breaks with the bag boy. Instead, she stayed in the prep room by herself, munching on chips from the vending machine till her 15 minutes were up. Sometimes Gil would join her, delivering unwanted sermons on the cultivation of fruits and vegetables. It seemed she had no escape. She kept getting headaches. She'd go home and tumble into bed, her skull buzzing with pain. Then another girl disappeared. Her name was Melissa. And it happened on the night that Megan called off work, which she'd begun doing more and more frequently. Brindle's supermarket wasn't mentioned in the news, but the last place anyone had seen the pretty college freshman was the little ice cream stand across the street. People often stopped there after grocery shopping. Megan's headaches got worse. One night, she heard her name squawked out on the intercom.
Megan? Please report to the upstairs office. Megan to the upstairs office.
The upstairs office belonged to the store manager, Mr. Keel. He almost never stayed in the store that late. Megan couldn't imagine why he would call her up there. She looked to Gil, who was wrapping tomatoes in little styrofoam trays.
Wonder what's up?
He glanced at her, then looked back at his hands.
Dunno. Better go see.
She made her way to the front of the store, wiping her hands on her apron. Lawrence lounged at the end of the checkout lane. He waved as she passed and mouthed the words, "Sorry, man." She walked up the steps and entered the office. Sitting behind the cluttered desk was Mr. Keel.
"Megan, have a seat."
He gestured to the plastic chair in front of the desk. Megan nodded and sat wordlessly. Mr. Keel cleared his throat and continued.
Megan, this is probably the hardest job a manager has to do.
He talked about dedication to one's job, staying focused, being on time, being at work when one was scheduled. During his speech, Megan just stared down at her tattoo, the arm outstretched, reaching for help from beneath a sea of red flowers. She thought of what it meant, thought about the companion piece she was going to get on the other arm after holding down a job for a year sober. So much for that. When she came down out of the office, she refused to look at anyone. She took her apron off and dropped it, right there on the floor in front of the customer service desk. She turned and started for the door. Lawrence came up behind her, putting his hand gently on her arm.
"Hey, man, you okay?"
She pulled away from him and snapped.
"Get the fuck off me!"
His hand dropped and she shuffled out of the store alone. Megan stopped doing laundry and quickly ran out of clean clothes. After a while, she wore dirty ones or none at all. It didn't matter much. She was barely leaving the apartment. She had not found a new job yet, and the end of the month was fast approaching. She didn't care. Her headaches continued, and it took most of her energy to keep from giving them the medicine she knew they so badly wanted. Lawrence kept texting her, wanting to know how she was, if she needed anything, and if she wanted to get together. She didn't want to hear from him or hang out. She deleted them as soon as she got them, and after a while, they stopped coming. Then one night, her phone started buzzing. It had been a week since she had received a text or call from anyone. She looked at the clock. It was 2:30 in the morning. She'd been lying awake, her eyes shut, her head pounding mercilessly as she tried to force her way into sleep. She let the phone go for a while, listening to it vibrate amongst the water bottles and soda cans that littered the nightstand. It wasn't long before the sound became a needle, burrowing into her brain. Finally, she sat up and grabbed it, knocking the drift of garbage to the floor. Its glowing screen hurt her eyes in the dark. When she read the messages, her anger melted immediately to cold curiosity. For the time being, her headache was forgotten.
I did it! I'm in the building! I'm gonna get my ghost footage! You should come down here and help me. Miss you, girl. I'm gonna wait for you. Hit me back, please. Just heard something. A ghost? Excited. Text, don't call. Fucking shit, it's Gil in here with me. What the fuck? You awake? I don't know how he got in this place. It's locked. Let himself in with a key. He got a girl with him.
As Megan read, the phone suddenly buzzed in her hand and played a sound like tinkling bells. It meant the picture message had come through. She looked at what Lawrence sent and shuddered. The resolution wasn't good and there was a bad glare from some unseen light, but she could make out two people walking down a narrow hallway together. Their backs were to her, but one was obviously a thin woman or girl. The other was a squat male shape. The details were nearly lost, but Gil's denim jacket was recognizable. A chill slid down her spine. She tossed her sweaty sheet aside and swung her feet over the edge of her bed. She typed out a response, wishing her thumbs weren't so fat.
Get out of there! Call the police, Lawrence! I'm serious!
She hit send and waited, her nerves jangling wildly. A minute later, he texted her back.
Fuck that. I just turned 18. I will go to jail for real for trespass. Don't call no cops. I'ma bust him. He ain't shit. Look at this.
The bell chimed and another photo popped onto the screen. Lawrence had zoomed in on Gil and his companion. The girl had skinny legs. She seemed very young, a teenager maybe. Gil was pulling her along with one hand. In the other, he gripped something that glinted in the light. Megan couldn't be sure, but thought it might have been a knife. The pounding in her head came back and it was hard to think clearly. What if nothing horrible was going on? What if there was no knife and Gil was just making out with some girlfriend? She didn't want to get everyone in a panic, involve cops over a misunderstanding. Her thumbs worked madly, and she had to retype several words as she sent him another text.
I'm coming. Let me in. We'll figure it out together.
A moment later, her phone buzzed.
Yes, plan. See you soon.
Megan sat there a while longer trying to gather her thoughts. She had to get dressed. All she had on was a dirty t-shirt. She tossed her phone on the bed and went to her dresser. Nothing was clean except some socks and underwear. She forewent both, pulling a pair of jeans off the floor and up over her bare hips. She slid her feet into some flip-flops and grabbed her car keys. As she stepped out the door, she looked back at her little apartment. It was a wreck. There were paper plates, bowls, and cups lying everywhere. DVDs scattered around the TV. Clothes draped over nearly every surface. Books, papers, it hurt. This was her. This was who she had become. Who she'd always been, with or without the pills. She tried to imagine it cleaned up, herself sitting in it, smiling. Maybe there'd be someone with her. She couldn't quite do it. With a sigh, she closed the door and left. She pulled into Brindle's and parked at the back of the lot. There was a fence around the building, but long ago, kids had torn a corner loose on the side where it bordered the grocery store. There were only five other cars on the lot, four of which belonged to the store employees. Megan never understood why they stayed open 24 hours anymore. People shopping late at night would rather go to one of the big, well-lit superstores. This place was honestly a little spooky. She hurried to the hole in the fence and dropped to the ground. She came through on the other side and stood up. The building loomed above her, a mute box of brick, 4 stories tall. There were windows that went around the top 2 floors, but the bottom 2 were blank, except for graffiti. She knew from past experience that there were 2 doors around back. She crept through the heavy shadows and tall grass, around the corner to the rear of the building. Broken glass, beer bottles, mounds of cigarette butts, and countless condoms littered the rocky courtyard. There was a bitter stab of nostalgia, and Megan smiled in spite of herself. She walked up to the nearest door and found it wedged open with a brick, revealing a thin line of deep black. She approached cautiously and whispered into the opening,
"Lawrence, hey, where are you?"
There was no answer. She reached into her pocket, intending to text him, and realized she didn't have her phone. For a moment, she considered going back to look for it in the car, but remembered that she had tossed it on the bed when she put on her pants. It suddenly occurred to her that she hadn't brought anything useful. All she had was a tiny LED pin light on her keychain. She held it up and pressed the button. The bright blue beam was woefully small, but it was the best she had. With a deep breath, she pulled open the door and stepped inside.
"Lawrence! Lawrence!"
Megan continued to whisper his name every minute or so as she headed nearly blind down the hallway. She listened for footsteps or voices, but heard nothing. Not even the rustling of rodents. The place was silent. She slid one hand along the wall next to her and eventually rounded a bend into a wider space. Shining the little light around revealed a small lobby. There were 2 moldering vinyl couches and a set of elevators. Megan swung the tiny blue beam across the silent doors and discovered a stairwell rising up into a dark passage.
"Lawrence?"
Her whisper echoed and faded. There was no answer. Both her heart and her head were pounding. She slipped into the stairwell, swallowed by the gloom. Step by step, she made her way up. The only sounds, her clanging footfalls. She reached the first landing and tried the door. It was locked. She looked around, unsure whether or not to go on. She had nearly decided to leave when she heard a noise from somewhere above. Just a momentary voice, not even a word, just a sound. There one moment, then lost to the dark, but real. She licked her lips, uncertain, and started up the steps to the 3rd floor. She reached the next landing and stopped. Thin white light shined from somewhere nearby. The door was ajar. Something was propping it open. A foot shoved between the door and the wall. It dangled at the end of its ankle, limp and lifeless. Megan recognized the red Adidas with the loose white laces.
"Oh my God, Lawrence!"
She dropped to the floor and pushed the door away from his body. She climbed into the hallway and was nearly blinded by the sudden presence of fluorescent ceiling lights. She patted her hands along his torso until her fingers found the warm red sticky mess at his side. His shirt was ripped, the flesh beneath spongy and raw. He didn't move. His chest was still. The pain in her skull pressed against the back of her eyes, and she squeezed them shut until it subsided a little. She looked at Lawrence's face. His eyes were open and dazed. She pushed her fingers beneath his jaw, trying to find a pulse. She felt nothing. She didn't need to. She knew by looking at him that he was dead. Tears began streaming down her cheeks, and soon she was rocking and sobbing, clutching at the dead boy. This went on for what felt like hours, but eventually Megan became still. An idea struck her. His phone. She didn't want to, but she reached into the hip pocket closest to her. All she found was spare change and a small baggie of pot. She tossed it to the floor and checked the other. It was empty. She couldn't face trying to turn him over to search his back pockets, and it was unlikely he'd put his phone there anyway. She scrambled around the hallway on her hands and knees looking for it. After a few minutes, she was sure whoever had killed him had also taken the phone. She stood and gazed down at him one last time. He'd been her friend, her only friend.
"I'm so sorry, Lawrence."
Megan walked on past the body. Doors lined the hallway, one every 6 feet or so, and she read the nameplates that hadn't completely faded. Sequencing, extractions, UV, composting. Then, near the end of the hallway, they just became Lab A, Lab B, Lab C. She wondered what had gone on here before the doors had been locked up and the lights turned out for good. But the third floor lights were on. What was going on here now? She reached the end of the hallway and stopped. Another passage crossed the one she was in, creating a T. The ceiling lights were off again, heading in either direction. But down the left-hand side, there was a bright glow illuminating the walls. It wasn't fluorescent. In fact, it didn't seem man-made at all. It was like thousands of candles were burning down that way. Except even that wasn't quite right. Megan turned, squinting into the light, afraid but unable to turn back. She moved forward into the hallway for another 20 feet before it suddenly opened into a wide white room. A set of three steps led up to a platform that abutted the wall. In the center of the platform was an open door from which the light spilled like a golden mist. There was a smell, fermentation and rot. It filled her nostrils and brought tears to her eyes. Her head had never hurt this bad. There were also sounds, footsteps shuffling about beyond the door, and a strange fluttering sound. It was like a wet umbrella being opened and closed. It was accompanied by interruptions in the luminescent flow, like someone passing a hand over a lamp. She stood at the bottom step and called out.
"Who's in there?"
"Come on in, Megan. It's okay."
She knew the voice. It was dreadfully expected.
"I won't hurt you."
"Of course not. You're harmless." Megan giggled as she went up the steps and through the door. Whatever she might have been expecting to see in that room, this wasn't it. Her mind felt wobbly as she opened her mouth and screamed. A high-ceiling chamber opened up before her. There was a platform with three steps that led down to an aisle that ran in a square path around the room. In the center of the chamber was a huge open space, and littered across this were the bodies of dead women. Dozens. Dozens of dozens, perhaps. It was hard to say. Many had decayed to the point where they were barely recognizable as human. The stench bloomed around her, rich and intense as she tried to count them. They sprawled head to foot and stacked upon one another like firewood. This was bad enough, but it was the thing clinging to the far wall that really upset her. A huge, glowing plant. Thick vines and tendrils radiated out from a greenish-brown nexus like stiff tentacles, some of them 70 feet long. Large spade-shaped leaves, green and splendid, sprouted all along these, swaying gently. Massive pink and white flowers had blossomed along the thicker vines, their petals opening and closing. It was from deep within their swollen pistils that the light was emanating. The tendrils would move and twist, and the flowers would turn with them, shining like beautiful, awful searchlights. Darker appendages, almost black, split into smaller, grasping tongues of fibrous plant flesh. They snaked over the pile of bodies on the floor, and Megan realized that many of them had found their way into the dead women's bodies, shoving down their throats and between their thighs. She thought of the door in the hallway marked compost and dry heath violently. She could hear the soft slitherings as the roots, and this is what the darker vines surely were, pulled out of one spot and sought to suck the nutrients from fresher sources. She looked again to the wall-climbing tendrils, drawn by the glow of the flowers, and noticed the clusters of fat red oranges dangling amidst the leaves, specially mutated by growers in Sicily.
Megan?
She turned to the voice. Gil was kneeling on the floor next to a naked girl. She couldn't have been more than 15 or 16 years old and was very skinny. Her lips and cheeks were sticky with red juice and pulp. She was smiling, her eyes searching the ceiling with dreamlike wonder.
"Those are horses, Daddy?"
she whispered. The excitement and longing in her voice broke Megan's heart and cut short her squalling. Sudden anger flared within her. She began trembling, her fists clenching and unclenching, and when she found her voice, it rumbled like a summer storm.
"What are you doing?"
Gil looked up at her, nonplussed. He blinked behind his glasses. In his hand was a half-eaten blood orange. It hadn't been peeled, just bitten into, skin and all, like an apple. He raised it to his lips and took a chunk out of it, chewing with obvious pleasure.
"Fertilizing and cultivating this miraculous citrus sinensis, the only one of its kind."
"What?"
He gestured to the thing that seethed against the wall. It seemed to watch and listen to them.
"When I busted in here a couple of years ago, it was almost dead. It had been living off of a security guard, a guy in a lab coat, probably a scientist, and maybe one or two others. They were so far gone it was impossible to tell for sure. Its fruit was withered and dry, but I was hungry, and it was still beautiful. Nothing like it anywhere else in this world. I was scared, but so hungry. I ate one of the oranges, and a little while after that, the voice started. It was low and soothing, like my mother's. It called me friend. It said, 'I need you. I need your help.'"
Megan looked at the bodies on the floor nearest to her. Horror blossomed in her chest as she recognized the woman who had left her son behind at Brindle's. She lay face down, her head resting between another woman's feet. A thick root was shoved deep in her rectum, turning and rooting somewhere within her guts. Its movement caused the woman's hips to rise and fall slowly in a nightmare mime of intercourse. Megan's heart climbed up her throat and choked her. She looked for the other girl, Heather, but couldn't find her. Without her gym shorts, she was indistinguishable from the other pretty dead girls. With a sob, Megan gazed across the crop of bodies to the heart of the plant. All the flowers had turned and focused on her and Gil. They were spot-lit, the stars of the show, and it was waiting.
"Gil, please."
She could think of nothing else to say.
"It takes care of me. I was homeless when it found me, Meg. I was nobody. I ate out of garbage cans and shit in doorways. Now I'm special. I take care of it, feed it, protect it, and it takes care of everything else. Tells me everything, what to do, how to do it, I don't have to think much at all. I just eat these.
He held the orange out to her. Juice dribbled down his fingers and pattered on the floor. He took another bite and patted the teenage girl's belly.
And they don't feel anything. They come along easy as you'd want. They just have a few bites and they come back to me, ready to do whatever they're told. They let me do things. Whatever I want, Megan, before they lay down, if they just eat the fruit.
Gil, this is wrong.
Her words felt weightless as they left her mouth.
It's easy.
She shook her head, trying to clear it of pain and confusion. Her brain felt heavy.
You tried to get me to eat those things. You tried to make me...
She pointed to the woman at her feet.
Like that.
Gil did not look at the woman. His eyes remained on Megan.
I tried to get you to eat the oranges, yeah. But not to make food out of you.
He stood and took a step towards her.
I want to be your friend.
Her eyes widened and a laugh burbled up her throat.
Are you kidding?
Gil's face was calm and solemn.
No, I need help. A friend. It wants me to have one, and I thought...
He looked down at his feet, suddenly shy.
I just really like you is all.
When he said this, the monstrous flowers began opening and closing rapidly, causing light to strobe against the dark walls. Was it blinking or applauding? Megan couldn't tell. Gil took another step in her direction, and she found herself wanting to meet him. She looked down at the tattoo on her arm. Taking her pills, drowning in those sweet red poppies, had been like lying down on cool sheets. Swaddled and cared for. She had lost all her friends, and her family had nearly given up on her. But so what? It had been so hard and so painful trying to escape their grip. She tried and tried and had nothing to show for it but a filthy apartment and unwashed jeans. Suddenly, Gil was right in front of her. He held the orange out to her, and she took it from him. The knife he had used to kill Lawrence lay beside the dream-struck teenage girl. Megan knew she could overpower him easily. He was shorter than she was, and he seemed weak. But she didn't make a move against him because the fruit was in her hand. She was Eve in the garden. Minutes passed. Juice dripped into her palm, and tears dripped down her cheeks. She looked up at Gil, who smiled at her, and she realized with dismay that she didn't know what she was going to do.
That was Blood Oranges by author R.K. Combrink. A good reminder that R.K.'s collection, These Lonely Places, is available now from our friends at Velox Books. Check out the link in the show notes or just head to www.veloxbooks.com, where you can find R.K. and plenty of other excellent authors you've heard of on this show. If you're more of a listener, These Lonely Places is available on audible.com. And everyone's favorite goofball and my good friend Jeff Sturdivant would be really happy if you bought a copy. Why's that, you ask? Because old Jeffy narrated it. So get out there and get you a copy, damn it. We don't hear too much about it, but old Jeffy's a hell of a narrator, y'all. A little about the author. R.K. Combrink is a writer and artist who lives in Cincinnati, Ohio, with his wife Elise and two sons, Colin and Cole. He's a founding cast member of the popular horror podcast, Night of the Living Podcast.
He likes his ice tea unsweet.
And he genuinely believes in Sasquatch. I do too. Thanks, RK.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at chillingtalesfordarknights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I'm afraid this is where we part ways, at least till next week. So grab a drink for the road, friend. And don't worry about dressing up for me. As long as you don't mind walking home in your underwear, I'd like to say a big hello and a thank you to all the newest patrons who went to patreon.com/Drew Blood and signed up. God bless you. May the wind be at your back, and may the road rise up to meet you. Remember now, every man is sociable until a cow invades his garden. Whatever that's supposed to mean. I'll see y'all next week. Go fuck yourselves. Good night, my friends.